This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you, thank you. 11:01 here on the Wake Up Call. We will, of course, be talking about the events from 10 years ago, but we're going to try and do it in a way that's not overly excitable, but more honorable. We'll be talking about 9/11 and the events after, the lives and careers and how 9/11 changed things. Our guest today, Dayton Haw, he's the chief from the Charlottesville Albemarle Rescue Squad. Dayton?
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us today. Another guest that we have with us, Mr. John Herman. John?
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
John, the parent of two children, and at the time, John, the parent of one child and a wife.
That's right. We're expecting our second on 9/11.
Let's see if I can do this properly. Our third guest, Kathy Hinchy. Kathy?
Yes.
With us, participating by phone today. Say that one more time.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, good. Just want to make sure that you were showing up on air to all the others and just not to me. Kathy, the long time, but 20 years yet? 20 years
teaching?
As a teacher, yes?
Well, not quite, 16.
16 years teaching of elementary school children, so a number of kids who were around to experience that, and then a decade of teaching kids who have no concept of what happened on 9/11, and teaching, obviously, in a large building with many, many people in it, and how that might have been affected by what happened on 9/11. Kathy, obviously participating by phone today.
Yes.
All right, so let me take a moment and thank the folks who allow us to be here today to talk about the topic. Let's thank the Charlottesville Area Transit, celebrating bus line contest winners with a poetry reading at the downtown transit station on Wednesday, September 21st, 6:30 p.m. You can enjoy the community's creativity and learn how to get involved at catchthecat.org. And let me also thank those folks in Lexington listening on 95.3 for being with us today. All right, let's jump into the topic. I think the most basic question asked with anyone having a conversation is, where were you on 9/11 at this time? We'll start with ladies first. Kathy?
All right. Well, I was at school, and my classroom of children were actually at PE at the time, and so I was in the classroom by myself, and my kids were elsewhere, and a colleague came in and said that her husband had just called her and I needed to turn on the television. And so I did. And I actually saw the second plane hit the tower, and at that point didn't really have a full concept of what was going on, but knew that it was something horrible was happening at the time. And I only had about 10 minutes before I had to go get my students to really, you know, watch the news. And so I watched for about 5 minutes, and then I felt this need to go tell other colleagues who didn't have the opportunity to, you know, be able to watch the television, to let them know at least what was going on. And so that's really how the word spread through the building, was, you know, people telling people, and it was in very hushed, I mean, the kids couldn't know. We couldn't let the kids know what was going on. And so, you know, within that 10-minute frame, me and several other teachers sort of went about, and the office was starting to get calls from the administration building, and so they were learning, and soon lots of things went into place as to what we were going to do as a building. But those in, that initial moment of where was I was in my classroom by myself, and then having to get myself together enough to go get these first graders and bring them back to the room and carry on like nothing was any different, but knowing that things had changed forever, sort of. So that's where I was.
Dayton, how about yourself?
Well, I was in my dining room packing a suitcase. My roommate and I were getting ready to fly to St. Petersburg, Russia from BWI that evening. And he had gone to the airport. He was flying with Pegasus at the time. He had gone to the airport and called and said, "Do you have the television on? They're closing the airspace." And so I turned the television on, and like Kathy, I also saw I had it on in time to see the second plane hit the second tower.
John?
Well, I was at work, and at the time I was the treasurer and campaign manager for a friend's campaign for the school board, and I was on the phone with my friend, the candidate. And I had seen on the New York Times online about the first plane, and we were talking about that. And he had switched the television on, and he saw the second tower get hit, and he told me about it. And at that point, we knew that we were dealing with something different than just an accident. And I was working at the time in a company. I was in a sort of classic sort of cubicle farm. And just a murmur went up around all the cubicles. And as everyone was finding out through phone calls from family and loved ones, and it just became sort of mayhem as everyone was, you know, work became secondary and everyone was just trying to figure out what the heck was going on. So that's where I was.
This question goes out to everybody. It's 10 years later, and I've heard this word used a lot, and I haven't determined. To me, it sounds like it's not the proper word. It's not the appropriate word, but I've heard it used many times from many different people or media organizations. Is this an anniversary? How are we describing the date today as we look back to 10 years ago? Dayton?
I don't really know what the proper word is, to tell you the truth. It is an anniversary, but normally anniversaries are thought to be positive things, and this certainly is not a positive thing. I don't know what the word would be.
Kathy?
Well, I think... Yeah, I kind of agree. Anniversary makes you think of something happy, but I think you have to, at least dealing with a generation that's now coming up that has no memory, and so you have to focus on it so that it doesn't get lost in the people who lived its memories and isn't ever taught to our younger generation.
But is there a better word, John Herman?
I wish I had a better answer than the other speakers have given, but I really don't. Anniversary doesn't seem quite right, but I don't know that we have a word in the English language to describe it.
Well, if any callers have the proper word for looking back on something so negative and dramatic in a negative sense, please call us up with your suggestion, 979-0919, if you'd like to participate in today's call with Kathy Hinchey, a school teacher, John Herman, a parent with one unborn yet with a pregnant wife, and Dayton Haw, the chief of our local rescue squad. Please ring us up with your word. Sean, I see somebody's doing that right now. We'd love to have you participate in our discussion about lives and careers after 9/11. All right. Guys, we're looking, hopefully this caller will have a better word than anniversary. Did any of you, John, originally from the New York area, did you have any friends or family who were personally involved, and, you know, whether it was in the tower or around the tower or, you know, something where you were concerned about, oh my gosh, I wonder how so-and-so is doing?
Well, closest relationship-wise person for me was my brother, and his wife were on a flight from JFK to Denver on that morning, and they actually, as we found out later, when they were in the air, they saw the first tower burning, and didn't know what was going on, but the stewardesses basically were just starting the beverage service, and they stopped and they pulled the carts up to the front of the plane and sort of made a barricade on the plane, and they subsequently got diverted to Detroit and ended up getting stranded there. But of course, at the time that was going on, we didn't know that they were safe. My mother called me and was terrified because she was trying to find out from the airline, you know, the status of the flight, and the airline either couldn't or wouldn't reveal any information, and she was afraid that his flight was either hijacked or at risk of being shot down by the Air Force for being, you know, a possible flying missile. And so we had a few hours there where we were just didn't know where they were and whether they were safe or not, and so it was obviously very scary time for us, and you know, just for me, hearing my mother in that sort of terrified state was pretty unsettling. Of course, later found out, knew a bunch of other people who either died or had close calls, but my own brother's welfare was the biggest concern for me that day.
All right, I'll come back to that question with our other guests. I do want to take a second and remind folks that I think I always think of this as for New York City, but I also need to make sure that I think more about it as to what it was. It also included folks in the Washington, D.C. area, the Shanksville, Pennsylvania flight, et cetera. All right, let me get our call. This is always tricky for me. I have to put Kathy on hold so she can still listen and pick up the other call, so bear with me. And we got our caller, Sarah from Levinson. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm well. Nice to hear from you.
You too, dear. I want to say that I am so relieved that my friends Jody and Eleanor and Molly and my friend Beth Ann made it through both World Trade Centers and the Pentagon bombing. But one thing I wanted to just point out, and I know it might be inappropriate timing, I'm just going to pipe it in there, is there's something out now called a book called Retrieved, and it's a Dutch photographer who took pictures of all the dogs that were at the, you know, World Trade Centers that are still alive, and it's a beautiful documentary of these animals that were down there, and there aren't that many. There were 100 dogs at least that made it down there to help save people. There are probably 15 that are still alive. And it's a beautiful, beautiful remembrance of them.
All right, Retrieved.
Retrieved.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Okay, take care.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right, Kathy, you know I'm going to cut you off at some point with all this button pushing on my end, so bear with me. So that was Sarah from Levinson reminding everybody. And I do know Sarah and quite the animal lover. And I think that falls into this throughout the hour is, you know, people always think about property and lives, and not that those things aren't important, but there are lives of others, whether it's a hurricane like we recently had, where the animals are also participants in some way, in a positive or negative way. We were talking with our guests, John Herman, talking about where he was at the time. I see somebody else is calling in. I'm still looking for that word. Anniversary is not the right word. Kathy, where were you when you heard about what happened? Oh, you already told me that. No. The question is, I have it circled on here. I should be able to read it. Family and friends personally involved.
Well, I had a really good friend, Lewis, who is an electrician, and he was doing some union work, actually, in New York City. And for several days, we didn't know, you know, we didn't exactly know where he was working, and we didn't know if he was okay, because his, of course, all the cell phone business, it was very hard to communicate, and his parents didn't know, but he ended up being fine. But like many others, once it happened, he said wherever he was working, just ash started falling out of the sky. They just left tools, they left the job, and they just started walking. but he's really the only, like, personal friend that was involved, and he ended up being just fine. But there were a few days there where we didn't know if he was okay.
And I think for those people who listen to this program know that I'm always enjoy going to Las Vegas in March for the basketball tournament, and my Vegas buddy Greg was actually worked in one of the towers at the time, and he got there and they went up, and then when the first plane hit, he grabbed a friend and they decided that they were going to come down and leave the area, and so he managed to walk away from something that could have been life-ending. An anonymous caller suggests Liberty Day or Rescue Day instead of Anniversary Day. Thank you for calling. Not that those aren't satisfactory, but I'd like to hear other people with your suggestions. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number. What are different words? Liberty, rescue, rather than anniversary 10 years later as we look back on 9/11. Dayton, I'm not going to ask everybody every question, but I do want to get to, did you know anybody? You were getting ready to get on a plane happened.
I knew no one.
That must be, I would think that for many people, you're in the minority. It seems like everybody, this is one of those events where you know someone. Somehow, you know someone.
And as time goes by, you run into friends that knew people. I know a pilot who knew people that were killed, part of the flight crew. And there were some nurses in the hospital that had relatives that were killed. So as time goes by, you run into more and more people that were personally affected by it. But I didn't know anybody that worked there.
Now, Dayton Haw, chief from the Charlottesville Albemarle Rescue Squad, a first responder. Did that word exist before 9/11? Was that a phrase?
Yes. Yes.
How did your career change after that?
Well, the rescue squad people, I don't think, have the same view of 9/11 that the fire department personnel do, and I think it is sort of a difference in the job description, if you will, and in age. A lot of the people on the rescue squad now were 12, 14 years old at 9/11, and they don't really have a clear, of course they remember that it happened, but over the 10-year period, it seems to me our vision of what actually happened has been sanitized a little bit. And so that's probably what they remember, is the sanitized version of what essentially was a mass murder.
And when you talk about sanitized, you mean like when Kathy was talking about being at school and feeling the trauma, and then for everyone being able to go home and watch the immediacy of the news as little tidbits came out, and repeatedly watching the towers fall, because not everybody knew what was happening. So you show those images over and over and over.
Right.
And now, when you say sanitize, you're talking about hearing about it, seeing the headline, reading the story, and they really don't show those images anymore. They show the towers there and not there, sort of like the new skyline.
Right. That's exactly right. I think that it's been years probably since you saw the pictures of the towers both collapsing, or even the second plane hitting. And there's some other things that I'm not going to mention on the air that you also don't see anymore, but it does affect the way that you view the incident. If you don't know the true, I guess horror is a proper word, if you don't know the true horror of it, then your view of it is just different than mine is.
All right, we are talking about lives and careers after 9/11, how the Twin Towers, the Washington, D.C., and the plane crash in Shanksville, Pennsylvania affected lives and careers. 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call with Dayton Haw, John Herman, and Kathy Hinchey participating by phone. Let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's mostly sunny today, 40% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs about 84, mostly cloudy with showers tonight. lows 55 to 60. A little warmer in Richmond. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny with only a 20% chance of showers. Highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's a pretty nice day out there. 72 in the Valley, 76 in Lynchburg, 82 in Richmond, 78 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where happiness is their priority. At Blue Ridge, you can return gear and apparel purchases at any time for any reason. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have three Richmond locations. And online for more store information, it's brms.com. All right, we got another caller. Again, it's that multi-button thing for me. And we have Paula from Richmond. Hey, Paula.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What you got for us?
Well, it's not an original thought, but some of the shows that I'm watching are calling it a day of remembrance, and I think that that is an appropriate way to term the day.
And we had another caller who calls it, agrees with you, as remembrance and says reflection.
Yeah.
I like those as well. Where were you when it happened, and did you have anyone close to you?
I think back on that day with a little bit of regret because I was in management at the time, and we had a deadline by the end of the day, and we couldn't let anybody leave the building. We had to get done. There was no relief from our home office, and I literally had to keep people there to get done the chore, and then everybody could leave and deal with their issues, but phone calls were coming in throughout the day. We were already at work before it started, and there were no televisions necessarily in our building, so we kind of heard by the internet, which wasn't as widely used then, and some folks had radios or had come in late and had heard about the situation. And then I got a call from a sibling who saw the plane hit the Pentagon on her commute, and she was panicked, and so we started making plans about travel for the family and where to go and that sort of thing.
Paula, thanks for your thoughts and reflections on joining us on Wake Up Call. All right. For those of you going, what the heck is that? That's me putting one line on hold, Kathy, who I have yet to accidentally cut off, right?
Right, I'm still here.
Yep. That's Kathy with us. I put Kathy on one line on hold so we can take the other callers on the other line. So you should consider that a good sound of me yet to screw it up while we have participation from other folks. Let me thank Dixon Disposal while I have a moment here. Dixon reminds you, you can reduce your household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind, and reminds you that small changes in your lifestyle can keep the planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up the trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. And you can find Dixon at 978-2111 or online at DixonDisposal.com. All right. This question for Kathy and John. Kathy, as you have your school kids now, how do you teach them, or do you teach them, about what happened?
Well, you know, it's interesting that as a mother, I had this conversation in the car with my son yesterday, because his football team did some recognition on the football field yesterday while they walked out with flags and they wore blue and white, blue and red socks. And when we were coming home, my son said, you know, what is 9/11? And so in very sort of general terms, you know, we talked about what had happened and why that day was so important to, as a country, for us to show, you know, our patriotism and the fact that we can remember what happened. But I as a parent had done a poor job of really teaching him what that day is about. And so as a teacher, I think it's a little bit easier because it's actually embedded in the curriculum a little bit, because we now have this Constitution Day that every classroom has to stop and teach about the Constitution, and so that's a very natural day to kind of just talk about reasons why we do that. You know, our country has been at war. You know, here are some things that have contributed to the fact as to why, you know, this document is so important. So I think it's easier as a classroom teacher than as a parent, because at least as a classroom teacher, you're, I don't want to say forced, but it's in, it's already embedded in the curriculum as to what you're teaching.
Well, John Herman, a parent of two, one child already born at the time, 10 years ago, a wife pregnant with a second child, what do you do?
Well, let me just back up a second and just say that, as you say, when on the date of 9/11, my older daughter was not yet three, and my wife was expecting our second child. And so the experience on that day, of course, we were just terror-stricken and grief-stricken by what was going on. And, you know, especially with a daughter not yet born, it was natural for us to say, you know, what kind of world are we bringing this child into, and to have some trepidation about, you know, becoming parents at that time. You know, what was, you know, what kind of world were we going to be bringing that child into? And so, you know, it was really a probably overly dramatic response, but we thought this is going to change everything. And I had a good chat with my ex-wife yesterday about how, in fact, it really has affected our parenting. And I'd say the effects have been a lot less dramatic than we kind of anticipated. I think for us, it's come down to sort of the larger problem of evil in the world and how you explain that to a child while with your young children you're trying to protect them from the dangers of the world and give them a sense of confidence that they're safe and that they're going to be taken care of. At the same time, you have to prepare them for the reality of the world. And, you know, after 9/11, the world is more complex and in some ways more threatening than it was before. And so just the job of a parent to prepare your child for the reality of living in this, you know, global community that we're in, you know, just became that much more challenging to try to find that balance between having hope and optimism and self-confidence, and at the same time being mindful of the real dangers that exist in the world and the complex reality that not everybody is looking out for you, and some people may even be dangerous to you. So you know, I think that's probably as much as I should say, but that's sort of my take on it and how we've related to it.
Dayton, do you have children?
I do not.
But you have these, you mentioned earlier about having the young age of folks in the rescue squad.
Yes. Yes.
Is there, I mean, I would assume that, especially with the date happening, again, we're talking about 9/11 and how the post-time period has affected lives and careers. You're welcome to call up. I'm still looking for that word that strikes me as something that should be used rather than anniversary. We've had liberty, rescue, reflection. I like that. I think is my best, my favorite at the time. And remembrance instead of the word anniversary. But the conversation must be happening at the rescue squad with those who are of age, with those memories, talking to those who may not be. So to me, that's some sort of teaching that's going on. And what do you hear there? Or what conversations are you having with that younger age group?
Well, interestingly enough, we don't have that much in the way of conversation. Our job is affected because now we have the national response plan and we have instant management classes and things and mass casualty classes that are mandated by the federal government to try to help us respond and mitigate anything that might occur in the future. And so, of course, they're exposed to these kinds of things because they're required to take these kinds of classes. I think for the fire department, though, it's completely different. I think in general for the fire department, they tend to be a little bit older, and they have a dangerous job, and they know it's dangerous. And we've spent, I shouldn't say we because I haven't participated in it, but the people have done things to try to make it safer. There are numerous OSHA regulations that have been passed to try to make firefighting safer. They have firefighter close call websites where people share information about things that are dangerous to try to make things less safe. But I think that 9/11 for firefighters reinforced in them the realization that one of these days something might happen, and they are going to be the ones that are expected to go towards that and to deal with it, and there's a possibility that they're going to die doing it. And I think that for firefighters, that is a stark realization that came from 9/11, that you just, there are lots of things you can do to make your job safer, but there may come a time where you're going to die doing your job.
11:32 on the wake-up call. Talk about stark realization. Comments from Dayton Haw from the Charlottesville-Albemarle Rescue Squad as we talk about lives and careers post 9/11. We have Kathy Hinchy, who's an elementary school teacher, participating by phone for the hour. We have John Herman, a parent of two, talking about parenting. Dayton, you were talking about how at the time when it happened, you were preparing to get on the plane.
Yes.
Did that affect, did 9/11 change your mindset, at least for a short, if not an extended period of time, on traveling like that?
No, it really didn't, to tell you the truth. And after I got the first phone call, I kept packing. I think it wasn't until the second plane hit that they started closing the airspace. But planes have hit the Empire State Building before. And I, at first, when there was just one tower that was on fire, I thought maybe it was a freak accident. So I kept packing. I was prepared to drive to BWI and fly out.
Hey, John, you travel a fair bit, and I know that in previous, I don't know about 10 years ago, but familiar with some of your job times, and you traveled a fair bit. Did this affect your mindset?
Well, at a practical level, the experience of air travel has gotten a lot more unpleasant since 9/11. You know, and I've in a previous job, I flew to London Heathrow a number of times, and that airport is a big hub of concern. And so flying between U.S. airports and Heathrow particularly, you go through a lot of security screening, a lot of delays, and so on. So, you know, on a practical level, I've cursed 9/11 a number of times, you know, taking off my shoes and belt and you know, juggling all of my gear while making a business trip, and going through the security screening and the like. I think all of that has bred a lot of cynicism in the traveling public too, that, you know, we go through, jump through all these hoops, and, you know, how much good is it really doing? Is this overkill? You know, are these, you know, low wage screeners here really doing a, you know, effective job? And you just have a lot of questions about that. So, you know, I would say my fear level traveling was certainly higher, you know, taking air travel for the just immediate aftermath. But quickly, the focus came to more to the day-to-day aspects of the inconvenience, the longer wait times, and the hassles of the security screening.
11:35 on the wake-up call as we talk about careers and lives after 9/11. Let me thank the Backyard UVA Corners Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue for being with WNRN and supporting us today. Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The Backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch, and then a pub food menu until close. You can call them at 202-8215. They have a Facebook page. And then it's thebackyarduva.com. Call us up with your questions or comments on how your life or career has been changed from 9/11. Our guests today, Kathy Hinchey, John Herman, Dayton Haw. Kathy, I had a caller suggest making 9/11 a federal holiday, day off for schools, etc. Your thoughts as a school teacher?
No, I don't. I think that you want them in school that day so that it can be a day of learning about, you know, what happened. I think once you start making it a holiday, it turns into, you know, another day to run to Walmart to get sheets on sale. So I think we need to be in school learning about the importance of that day.
Well, I think that sort of flows into, people always say, remember what Memorial Day is about. Remember what Veterans Day is truly about. That's regularly said by those who have an understanding of what it's really about. Dayton?
I agree with her. I don't see any reason for it to be a holiday because it does turn into a trip to Walmart day. But I have to say that I had two uncles that were in World War II, so I know a little bit about their goings on and what happened to them. But I'm also embarrassed to say that I haven't been to a Memorial Day or a Veterans Day ceremony recently.
Good or bad, living in Earliesville, I know that Earliesville, yes, regularly, yearly, has a service, although I can't claim to actually have been, but there are a group of people, however small, who do still make the effort and put forth the lessons for some of us, whether we choose to learn them or not.
Yes.
11:38 on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, The Hook examines what September 11th could have meant and what has come since. Did you know the Bank of America has filed suit against Donald Trump? And do you know why? There's talk about the earthquake and how it affected the schools. And the sports doctor asks why UVA and Virginia Tech fans can't watch their games on TV. The Hook, it's an acceptable addiction. So let me thank L. Oppelman's for their support and Central Virginia's Complete Music Headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars and banjos, mandolins, violins, as well as electric guitar packages. They also have complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com online. And let me thank everybody with a little support. We bring you unique programming here at WNRN. We keep you up to date on community events, and we give you many opportunities to win things. This fall, we ask you show your appreciation by making a donation to WNRN. The fall fund drive starts on September 19th, but of course, we are accepting donations now. Go to WNRN.org to see the new t-shirts and hoodies and learn about our member card. You can also learn about the grand prizes that won't be available later, like a new record player from Deep Groove Records, you know, four passes to see Fleet Foxes at Merriweather Post, and tickets for other items. Meet and greet with Brandy Carlisle. Early pledging is now at WNRN.org. All right, back with our guests again, 11:40 on the wake-up call, talking about lives and careers post 9/11, Dayton Haw, Kathy Hinchey, John Herman. Kathy, did 9/11 affect your politics?
I mean, personally?
Yes.
No.
Have you changed your votes or what applies to your votes?
No.
John?
No, I don't think so.
Dayton?
I don't think so either.
I find that interesting because it seems like what's at the front of the politicians' speeches has been changed by what happened at 9/11.
But their behavior hasn't.
John, with two young kids, certainly during the short time period after 9/11, were you concerned when you had to leave the home to go to work? Did you look back a little more? Did you make? Did you have the feel the need to make sure that things were safe?
That's a really hard question to answer, to remember what my state of mind was at that time. I mean, I think we were on a heightened state of alert. We just didn't know at first, you know, who had done this and why and what else they had planned to do. You know, I think in the little house that we lived in Batesville, we felt like we were pretty far away from the fray and pretty safe and didn't have a lot of immediate concerns. But, you know, with family I have in the New York metro area, friends in the D.C. area, you know, had a sense that they were vulnerable and was concerned about traveling to those areas, you know, certainly with my kids and whether it was exposing them to, you know, there were things like anthrax scares in the subways, and we just didn't know what was going on. There were a lot of copycat incidents at the time. And so I would say that we had a greater sense of wariness in public spaces, but as far as our own home was concerned, we felt pretty safe and secure.
Kathy, working in a school, a public building of that size and with that many people, the majority of them being kids, did the way that you did your job on a daily basis, the way the school was run, was that changed, that part of your career?
Yes, because it was made very clear to us very early on, which I didn't realize, or maybe I didn't read the fine print, but that if there became an emergency situation where, you know, we had to be locked down with these students, that we became civil servants of the state and we would not be able to leave. We would be in charge of these children until the bitter end. I mean, whatever the end would have been. And I don't think that I had a true concept of that because I didn't have children when that happened. So I didn't have that full concept of course I would care for these children. I mean, I guess I just thought, you know, okay, I'll just leave and go home if things get too bad. It was explained to us fairly quickly that was not going to be the case. Being in the area where we are, which is lots of military bases, lots of bridges and tunnels, we would be, you know, we become civil servants, and we would do what the state told us to do. And so that sort of changed. That became very prevalent. You know, we were made aware of that. But just the way that we handle, I mean, I guess everybody in every sort of job sector this happened, but your emergency plans were tweaked. Everybody started looking at, do we know what to do in the case of an emergency, and not just a fire, but bombs and, you know, anthrax and all kinds of different situations. We became being trained in that kind of situation that before that, I don't remember that being prevalent. I mean, we knew what to do. Fire drill went off. You took your kids outside. But other than that, there was no sort of plan in place. And now there are plans in place. You know who's in charge. You know exactly where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to do. So in that sense, that has changed.
All right, we have a caller.
Yes, sir.
So far so good. I haven't cut anybody off. Jerry from North Garden. Hey, Jerry.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Well, it's a good day so far. What do you need to tell us and share with us?
Today, rewinding back, you were looking for a word, right? And today is a day of remembrance, but this is not the first time that the United States has been sucker punched. We can think about Pearl Harbor back in the early 40s and other days. And today we refer to that day as Pearl Harbor Day. I believe today already has a name. It's 9/11. All you have to do is say that, and everybody knows what you're talking about. I appreciate y'all's conversation because it is a rather complicated thing. But as far as the name goes, I think it's such a horrific event that there is no name in the human language for it. And that's probably appropriate.
Jerry, don't get me wrong. I agree. 9/11 represents Pearl Harbor Day or Pearl Harbor. It doesn't need the day at the end of it. I wanted something other than anniversary.
Yes.
That's what was bothering me was, as Dayton said, anniversary brings along positives with it. And while for some, I believe that there are some trickles of positive that go along with what has happened since. But I was having trouble with many people referring to this as the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and I wanted a different word for that.
Yes, I think as one of your guests there pointed on out, it's not quite right. It's a difficult situation, and I don't believe there is any word. Now, back on up and say that again, that it's such a memorial event that there is no word.
Thanks for calling in, Jerry. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Okay, take care, guys.
All right, Kathy, you still with me?
I'm here.
Oh, yes, I'm on a roll. 11:47 and the wake-up call. Still with all of our guests, Kathy Hinchy, John Herman, Dayton Haw, talking about lives and careers since 9/11. And we can do this because of support from businesses like Blue Ridge Graphics. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and online it's brgtshirts.com. All right, again, 979-0919-1877. WNRN Rocks, if you need the toll-free number. We'll throw this one out to John first. I believe Jerry, he said a word that made me think of this question. There's the memorial at the 9/11 Zero Ground, and it's 10 years later, and that memorial is incomplete. Is that, for many people, I've heard both sides of this, is we have to do it right, and others who say that should have already been done because that shows not only the proper memories of those who were killed there, but it shows the way that the United States can stand up and move forward and show the other cultures our strength. Your thoughts?
That's interesting. I was just watching the there was a remembrance ceremony there this morning that I was watching on CNN before coming into the studio, and you know, honestly, I'm impressed that they've done as much as they have with the site. I think what they have there now is beautiful and a good tribute to the people who lost their lives there. I guess I tend to be pretty sort of realistic about the fact that we live in a sort of complicated bureaucratic society with a lot of different interests and viewpoints, and the fact that it's taken 10 years to sort out everybody's interests and priorities and make decisions about what we're going to do there doesn't really surprise me. And it doesn't really trouble me that we weren't able to just all agree on one thing and go about implementing it straight away. I mean, that's a nice vision, but it doesn't really reflect the society that we live in today. And I think frankly good thinking, properly thinking people disagreed about what was the right thing to do, and it's taken a while to sort it out. And I think we should be patient with that and not expect miracles. I don't think having a beautiful memorial on that site and having it up quicker would necessarily take away the pain of the losses. And in some ways, it might help people forget it more quickly to say, oh, we've wrapped that up and it's all done and we can move on with our lives. So it really doesn't bother me at all that it's still a work in progress. And, you know, I think the architect for the overall project has taken the view that, you know, this is going to be evolving. You know, it's a dynamic city, and this site is going to be growing and changing for years to come. And that's just the way New York is, and that's just the way modern metropolitan life is. And I think that's right. We're not going to have it, you know, things are never going to be done. It's always going to be evolving and changing and growing, and I think that's a good thing.
But Dayton, there was also there have also been comments that, aside from the memorial, that the buildings, why can't a strong America put those buildings back up, or at least make the effort to put those buildings back up, to show you knocked it down, but sort of flex your muscles and say, but now watch us and what we do.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with everything that John said. But I think that there is construction ongoing there now. I think they're up to about 80 floors on one building. And I think nobody could agree on what it ought to look like. It's a large site anyway. You know, there weren't just the two towers. There are lots of other buildings there that are part of the World Trade Center complex. And I think nobody really knew what they wanted to have the new buildings look like.
Kathy, you were talking about how the building, or you know, the change in ways to handle kind of, what did you say, you're going to become a civil servant?
Right.
If something were to happen in that set, where you become the parents to those kids because no one can leave the building. Talk about parents for a minute. I mean, you're a teacher to how many kids were in your class last year? 25?
23.
How do you deal with the parents, whether on that day and in the future or in the, you know, since then, your concept of, or your, you know, routine for dealing with parents in such an issue?
Well, the parents that on 9/11 that came were in a complete panic. They just wanted their children for several different reasons. Some lived on a military base, and they didn't know if their husbands or wives were going to be deployed, and so they wanted their children, and then they wanted them back on the base. They felt safer there than anywhere else. Others, I think, just came in, you know, I want my family and I want them around me now. And then, of course, there were some who, you know, they handled it like any other normal routine day, which I think now, when I look back on it, that's what I've taken away from anything, is that no matter what the crisis, the panic, whatever it is to try and keep some sort of normalcy, because children sense panic. Children sense when adults feel like something really bad is going on. And so when the adults around them start to show worry and stress and panic, then that's when they become upset and cry and they don't know what's going on. And then I also learned that human beings are human beings, and everyone handles things differently, and that you have to just, you never know what's going to come to the door in a situation like that. And so I try to just be the calm person that was sort of in charge, because the parent that comes in a panic and wants their baby wasn't really in charge at the time. And so, okay, well, calm down, here's some tissues, that, you know, just kind of being the calming person. And even now, as I deal with parents in any kind of situation, I have learned that to be that calm, centered person and not to get pulled into the crisis or the panic, no matter what it is. You know, if it's, you know, a parent who's sitting across from you upset because their child's not doing well in school, or a parent, you know, there's been a tragedy in the family and the
you know, they've come to you and they need you to help them with their children, whatever it is. I think what I've taken away as a teacher from that experience is the trying to be the calm one when everyone else around you isn't calm. I think that answers your question.
It does. Thank you very much. I mean, I can't... you're right. I mean, the thing that struck me when you said that kids can identify when they can see the parents feeling those dramatic concerns. I mean, the communication isn't there. Kids can't talk to parents about so many of those things, and so it's all body language.
Right.
And they pick up so much of that. 11:56 on the wake-up call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. We are talking about post 9/11 and lives and careers. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. John?
Well, it's just something that I kind of wanted to say, which is that, you know, for me, I think 9/11 was a day in my lifetime like other people experience in other generations, like Pearl Harbor or other such things, where it was just a moment where, you know, it was just an extremely dramatic moment and really a traumatic moment, you know, sort of the fear and shock that we experienced. You know, I grew up, you know, sort of almost in the shadow of the World Trade Center, watched those buildings go up as a small child. When they were completed, you know, my dad took us to the top, the windows of the world, and looked down at that frightful and amazing view. And, you know, seeing those buildings fall was really just a, you know, sort of a really traumatizing event for me. But the thing that I remember most about 9/11, besides just that shock and horror, was in the immediate days afterward, having a stronger sense of community than I think I ever had before or since, having, you know, spontaneous exchanges with people on the street, waving to people in cars who had signs or flags on their car. Just it felt like people came together in a way that I had never experienced. And you know, eventually the realities of politics and differences crept back into our lives. But there were a couple of days there where we felt like we were all, you know, one people, and we had support from people around the world who aren't always our best friends. You know, when people across Europe and the Arab world, you know, showed sympathy for us, it was really impressive. And
well, one of the things that I wasn't aware of, but hearing as this, the wind up to today, there were people from 80 different countries around the world who were involved in, you know, one of the deaths of the 3,000 plus from that day. And I think, you know, it was truly the World Trade
right.
Center, and people seem to forget that. It seems to be quite the American day, but there were people from all over. And I think that the word today is reflection. It's not the 10th anniversary. It's the 10th year of reflection on 9/11. And I think, at least for me, that was the word that struck me most of some of the ones that we received. All right, so 10:59, just a moment left. Dayton, I'm going to throw this question to you to finish us up. Has the death of Osama bin Laden, and now being 10 years later, does that provide closure?
No.
All right. We'll go out with that simple phrase. Dayton Haw, chief of the Charlottesville Albemarle Rescue Squad. John Herman, a parent during that time period of an unborn child and a young child. And Kathy Hinchy, a public school teacher of elementary school kids. Thank you all for participating.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
And I hope everyone has a day of find your good feelings somewhere in the day.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.